Penguin Random House Audio presents The Art of the Wasted Day. This is the author, Patricia Hampel. Prelude. Sometime around 1535, a good 30 years before the French Wars of Religion staked Catholic and Protestant heads on pikes around the Bordeaux countryside, in a gray stone castle deep in the wine country near Bergerac and Saint-Emilion, Pierre Montaigne, of a recently ennobled family, took the unprecedented step of hiring a lute player to awaken his child every morning. He was not an educated man, but he was an ardent father. He followed a theory probably picked up during his military years in Italy, his son later wrote, that it troubles the tender brains of children to wake them in the morning with a start and to snatch them suddenly and violently from their sleep, in which they are plunged much more deeply than we are. The lute followed Pierre Montaigne's boy, Michel, around the castle. I was never without a man to do this for me. Music, lyrical, wordless, was the soundtrack of his childhood, the groundbeat of his existence, an inducement to reverie. Though he reports that his nature was always gentle and tractable, Michel Montaigne, celebrated in our time as the first modern man, and in English departments as the father of the personal essay, that most amateur literary form, confesses that he was, in fact, so sluggish, lax, and drowsy, that he was a poor student when lessons required serious application. No one, he says, could tear me from my sloth, not even to make me play. He was otherwise engaged, floating on the charmed notes of that childhood lute, no doubt, lolling in the lap of leisure, adrift on fey melodies handed down from the Provençal lays of the troubadours. There was a fugitive genius in this indolence. What I saw well, he says cannily, much later, and beneath this inert appearance nourished bold ideas and opinions beyond my years. Montaigne found his vocation early, companioned by music plucked on sheepgut as he went up and down the staircase of his father's cold house, the same stony place where, years later, he would return from a life at court to sit alone in a room with words, to reveal his mind, or really, to discover his mind. He divined early the value of being sluggish, lax, drowsy. He was not, as people now say, the first modern skeptic. He was the first modern daydreamer. Timelessness. It begins July afternoon, under the shade of the beechnut tree. The tree belongs to Mr. Kinney. The shade is ours. It must be 1953, because the Magnavox has just been delivered from McGowan's TV and appliance on Grand. It's not just for watching Lucy, my mother says, already mistrusting it. You're seeing history. She points to the first smudged image she allows us to see, the Koreans and Chinese and Americans signing their names in a big Bible-y book. Peace, she says, settling in with her cigs, the chipped cloisonné ashtray at hand. An announcer drones from the glass box, murmuring names. One after another, men approach the heavy table to sign the book, each handing a fountain pen to the next. Mother taps her cig against the little Chinese ashtray. A gift, she tells me, from her uncle who was a U.S. customs agent in San Francisco, half a world away from us in St. Paul. He got the ashtray when he broke an opium smuggling ring, she says proudly. He left the ashtray to her. Did he steal it, I ask? She looks startled. Not exactly, she says uncertainly, turning back to the television. This is going to take a long time, the men handing the pen back and forth. History, it turns out, is boring. So I come out here, throw myself on the ground where the feathers of the beechnut sway and tilt. The green filigree patterns the sky. Light filters my face. It's hard, the ground, yet also soft, the sponge of lawn. I shut my eyes. The customs agent uncle, dead before I was born, is standing on a San Francisco dock. Does he have a gun? He has a badge, that I see. He lifts the blue cloisonné ashtray out of the burlap bag, and a Chinese man has his hands up in the air. He has a long pigtail I recognize from the black and red lacquer tray Mother brings up with soup and saltines when we're sick in bed. There must be a gun somewhere, but where is it? The scene fades and a fresh image appears. Our next-door neighbor, Mr. Kinney, who presents himself in the dark for no reason. There he is, filling my mind. Mr. Kinney is a widower. My mother says his wife has been dead forever. A hush of respect hovers over this fact. Because he is a widower, and because he has money, he has a housekeeper. She doesn't like me. She wears a flowered apron trimmed with rickrack, and her designation, housekeeper, makes her slightly sinister. Who has a housekeeper? Not normal people. Only Mr. Kinney, a widower, without children, but with money. He owns the Coke factory near the zoo, a place of foreboding, heaps of blackened coal, acrid, smoking. They'll have to clean that up one day, my father says. Mr. Kinney sits in his glassed-in sun porch before dinner, sipping whiskey from a lowball glass. He drinks after dinner, too, slowly, meditatively. He reads, his old smooth head glowing under the floor lamp. He has decided against a television set, he informs my father, who has inquired if, with the windows open in the summer, the sound of the Magnavox carries. We've all noticed the nasty bark of the laugh track. Nothing like real laughing. He's decided to stick with books, Mr. Kinney tells my father. He also listens to the radio as Halsey Hall calls the ball game in a voice juicy from a chewed cigar. You can see Mr. Kinney leaning back in his sloping armchair, eyes closed, following the game. Another person who shuts his eyes to see. In the summer, you can hear the metallic chink of ice in the lowball glass. He drinks alone, my mother says. When you close your eyes, you see and hear things you didn't notice before, though they must have been there all along. It's not that you make things up. You notice things. Maybe that's a kind of making up? Hard to say. But it's all more real than history blatting away in the living room where my mother stares at the gray glass, tapping her cig against the little saucer of the blue ashtray taken from the Chinese man with his hands above his head. Mother is still there as the pen passes from a Chinese man to an American and on to the next and the next. She's happy. She's watching peace occur in the wide world. Peace is vital to her. We had to drop the bomb, darling. It ended the war. It saved lives. But now, here, under the shade of the beechnut, I float past the customs agent and the Chinese smuggler, over the disapproving face of Mr. Kinney's housekeeper, above mild Mr. Kinney himself, swirling his oily drink on his sun porch. Day after day, night after night, during my endless girlhood, I float away like this. My father says Mr. Kinney takes his bourbon on the rocks. Mr. Kinney is slipping down a craggy cliffside under a shower of coal dust. He teeters off his sun porch, takes his bourbon on the rocks, drinks alone. There's something orchestral about all this. My father's voice, my mother's, the chink of ice, the echo chamber of that word, alone. A melodic moan struggles out of the sad-souled vowel at the word's dead center, the sob at the core of alone. Oh, the stagey
Sample complete. Ready to continue?